You're listening to Sunnyside Up, a B2B podcast that brings you the juiciest insights from go-to-market leaders and practitioners.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Sunnyside Up. I'm your host, Chris Moody. I'm very excited to talk to Barry Klein on leading through change, building alignment and hybrid work environments. Barry is Vice President of Success and Enablement at Austin-based Talru, and Barry provides leadership to the team of customer success analysts who have both revenue and customer service responsibilities for multiple verticals. He's passionate about establishing customers as partners. I love that. He focuses on long-term relationships, lifetime value, and establishing raving fans. There's an amazing book on raving fans too, which may come up later. We'll see. With more than 30 years of experience in customer-facing and executive roles, including Vice President of Sales Engineering for Vignette Corporation, Barry also spent several years running his own small business and consultancy. As a result, he's equally comfortable with enterprise-class relationships as he is with startups and small businesses. Barry, I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm very flattered.
Sweet. I'm glad you're here. I'm going to comment on the art too. We talked about this when we talked previously. So this is Barry's daughter who does the amazing artwork. You can get information on how to reach out to him at the end of the show if you want to talk about art.
As we've discussed, I'm looking to motivate her to monetize it. So any interest would be appreciated.
There you go. You need someone else to do it. It's the parental nudge that probably works against us there if it's anything like my children. All right, sweet. Well, one topic we talked about a lot was accountability and trust and the balance between both. So how do you balance accountability for remote teams to make sure that you're putting trust in your employees?
Yeah, it is such an interesting environment, as I think everyone knows now, Chris, where you don't have the ease of being walk around an office and look over someone's shoulder. And sometimes that can be too much. You know, when I've had roles where you're in the bullpen and everything's open and you have no privacy and you want to call your mom or you want to, you know, maybe take 5 minutes and do some shopping on Amazon, not ruin your day, but just take a little break and you feel like you can't, you know, it can be a little hyper focused. And then you send everyone home for COVID and now no one knows what anyone's doing. And now we're somewhere in between. One of the mantras at Talru that I've really tried to embrace, especially is certainly trust, but verify. If I don't have trust in the individuals who are on the team, you know, we're dead in the water right off the bat. I can't be looking over your shoulder every day. And what I'm looking for often is communication patterns. For instance, I ask my team to send very simple status reports every Friday. If someone isn't sending them, I can reach out. I don't go freak out. I just remind them, oh, I'm sorry, and they send it. But for instance, I've had situations where someone who was very regular about it suddenly was not. It's an interesting flag. People who would normally be responsive, we use Teams. I'm sure many of you use Slack or what have you. Response rates in Teams started to fall off. And you start to think you're working from home. What's distracting you? In one case, it was a medical issue that the gentleman in question had been diagnosed with cancer. And he was having trouble internalizing it. So his performance fell off. But what I saw first was the performance falling off, the lack of responsiveness, issues that came in from salespeople who were working with this individual. Hey, he's not responding as quickly as he normally would. So we had a very frank conversation. And I said, you know, what's going on? And he broke down and told me. And thankfully, I was pleased with how I approached it. Didn't yell at him. I wanted to know what was happening. And we found a plan to work together. And thankfully, he's well recovered and everything was addressed. So part of it is, and I have the advantage of working for a relatively small company, that personal interaction is the first phase. And then you look at the tools that you have. So for instance, we are very heavy users of Salesforce. We are very heavy users of Gainsight for customer success. Are there notes in there? Are there milestones? If I want to know what's going on with an account, do I have to call you? Because part of your responsibility is capturing the institutional knowledge that we can all benefit from, that allows us to know without having to spend an hour hunting through emails what's going on. It's not perfect, but can I see the effort that's going in to all of that? And also for one other thought is, because of the way we structure our advertising campaigns for the job ads that we are working with, is looking at the campaign setups. Are you following best practices? We have lots of checklists and best practices. Do I have to audit you and see if you've done it properly? Or our direct manager, is she having to audit you? Or is she saying, no, we get a new campaign, it's set up perfectly, and we go from there. So these are the things that I'm always looking at from both an informal standpoint, communication patterns, and also the data and the activity that we're capturing in our software.
I love that. And, you know, this is a selfish question. I'll be completely honest. I'm self-aware. And one of the things that I do think is a strength, I can build trust and rapport. Mm-hmm. And I have found throughout my career, I actually had an amazing direct report who was a friend who challenged me to be more direct. So if someone skews a little more on the build trust and rapport side, and maybe they're not quite as strong on accountability, what are some tips in addition to what you just covered that may help them take a couple notches without losing a great strength of building trust and having safe environments?
You know, it's funny. Just yesterday, I called one of my team's better performers because I was really unhappy with some job ads that we had put out into the world that were not compliant with our standards. And just very briefly, that's because, for instance, when we do job advertising, we expect you to be able to click on a job listing and go to the job. Now, there might be some questions along the way to make sure you're a fit, but it should be a good experience. It should be efficient, and your personal information shouldn't be getting collected. You know, it should be about you, the job seeker, getting to a job. So I'm testing this and I'm not happy at all. It's 20 questions. They're intrusive. And at the end of that process, there was no job presented to me. I was a little annoyed. So I called this high performer and I had to think long and hard. I wanted to yell, but this is not an individual who needs to be yelled at. And so I took a deep breath. And a lot of it was, again, you try to build that rapport and that trust, and you don't want to blow it up by saying, oh, now Barry's someone I can't trust. I made one mistake and he jumped up and down on me. It was a help me understand what happened. Have you looked at it since I flagged it to you? Yes. Do you agree that it's unacceptable? Yes. Tell me what happened and how we can prevent that from happening again. Do we need to tighten up our procedures? Do we have the procedures and we get a little lazy because everyone has their checklists and you don't use them all the time because you think everything's going to be fine? In this case, there was absolutely a situation where what we were told by the customer did not match what they delivered. So in her case, she trusted. She didn't verify enough. I spent several minutes thinking about how I wanted to approach it, making her understand that it was unacceptable, but she's good at her job. So what am I missing? What happened? And she learned from it. She was like, you're right. I was a little lazy because I thought it was teed up for success. I had other members of the team telling me they had worked on the configuration. I didn't check every box. Okay. I can live with that. And I've also, one other really easy trick. I'm fortunate because I have a few management layers, but if I see something that I'm not happy about, and I don't lose my temper, I actually am a nice person. And let's face it, we're selling job ads. We're not landing airplanes or curing cancer. You know, no one's going to die. But I will call one of my managers and I say, you need to call so-and-so because I might say something I regret.
Right.
Especially if it's not a member of my team and I'm just pulling rank as an executive at the company. I don't want to do that. So I'll call their manager and say, you have to address this because I don't want to cause more waves than I need to. Let's just focus on the behavior and the activity and fix it so it doesn't happen again.
Love that. I love that. Now, I know a lot of companies aren't completely fluent in hybrid or remote work. What are some effective ways to maintain that cultural alignment for those who aren't experts in remote work yet?
I don't know if any of us are, but I appreciate the thought. I was very pleased when we all went home for the pandemic that you could see culturally the sense of responsibility that we all had for each other. And to the extent, and I read a number of companies did this, we were all working too much. You didn't want to abandon anybody. So we were online from 8 a.m. until 10 p.m. And oh my God, they need me. And they responded. Eventually that calmed down, but that told me something about our culture and the accountability that we have to each other and the standard to which we hold each other. So we executed brilliantly. I was very pleased with my team's behavior. The other thing that we did during the pandemic, we cut back on our physical office space. We knew we'd be going back in some way, shape, or form, but we didn't need as much space as we had. So especially for my team, all of whom are generally in and around the Austin, Texas area, they're not required to go in on a, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 kind of thing. Some departments within our company are for different reasons, but I don't want to lose the best of the fact that we like each other. We trust each other. We get along. We learn from each other. And I also work on the assumption that if we need you as an individual to come to the office occasionally, even if occasionally means once or twice a week, that's not killing yourself. I expect you to be a professional and I expect you to understand the reasons why. I actually go in about 2 days a week, sometimes more, sometimes less, depending. So then you say, well, what are we going to do? And I sort of find, for lack of a better way to say it, excuses. you know, hey, let's get together for, I want to have the next group meeting and I have a few different teams. So it's hard to bring them all in. We take over the office too much. So let's bring this group in and let's have our weekly meeting in person. And I'll say, don't kill yourself to fight traffic. You know, I know you're going to be at your desk at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. Get caught up. Then after traffic, we'll meet at 11. We'll have lunch together. We'll hang out and work together till 3 or 4. And let's get home before rush hour starts again. And then I expect that when you get home, you're going to fire up your laptop again and you're just going to check what happened while I was in the car. And so that the trust that I try to express to the team is, I know you're going to keep up with your work. And I expect you to keep up with your work, even in the disruption of driving back and forth and that kind of thing. But I don't want to lose the best of what we have, which is we do get along and we do like each other and we do learn from each other.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. We were actually in Austin this week, this week for a revenue alignment leadership meeting. So it was sales, marketing, and customer success. And one of our takeaways was we need to do that at least quarterly, to your point. It's hard to get everyone together. It's expensive in some cases, but there is no substitute. So I think that's great guidance for everyone. Another thing we talked about previously, difficult conversations are inevitable in today's economy and today's time frame. So there are many folks who listen to the podcast that have probably had to deal with performance issues or layoffs and share bad news to their team. How do you make sure you maintain empathy and dignity going through something like that?
Yeah, it certainly is one of the more challenging aspects for any leader. And when we were first chatting, Chris, you know, I think I even said, well, I hope going into 2024, layoffs won't be as much of a thing as they've been. And then even just the news here in December has been, you know, more layoffs from large employers, folks cutting back. Wells Fargo pre-announced that they're going to hack and slash come the Q1. I mean, talk about tipping your hat and putting your staff on alert. There's still so many examples of these large layoffs. And so between layoffs and the actual act of having to dismiss somebody for performance reasons, they're a little bit different. Speaking about the second one first, my commitment is always to members of my team that if you're going to be fired, to say it plainly, that's not going to be the first time you've heard about it. Right. You're going to go on a performance plan. We're going to talk about expectations that are not being met. We're going to talk about maybe like with this gentleman who was dealing with a medical issue. What's going on in your life? How can I help? And will you take advantage of that help? And so everything from that first uncomfortable conversation of what's going on, and then informally what I will do when I have the, and I'm not as good at this as I should be, and I would encourage everyone to do so. When you have these conversations, even just email yourself. You have to have written documentation as to what you discussed. And if you do it contemporaneously, then you have credibility. You don't have to, I don't believe, and in our company, I don't send a copy to the employee and have them sign off on it, not at this stage, at least. But I want to take notes so that if it goes bad, we have the record. Then the next stage is the performance improvement plan. There's many different models that you could use, but that's the one where the employee is going to sign and agree to this. If that continues to go bad when the conversation occurs that we might have to part ways, hopefully it's not a shock. And even then, this is among the best advice that I've received that I would share with others, and I've executed it this way, is short and sweet. You know, hey, Chris, I understand, you know, we've been working through this. We don't think that things are going the way they should. We're going to part ways as of today, and here's our HR director to take you through the rest of it. We're not debating this. I'm not going to rationalize it. We know how we got here. And then going to layoffs, which can be so horrifically unpleasant and always are. And we discuss a lot internally that if you're doing a layoff and it doesn't hurt your soul, I don't know if you're the kind of person I want to work with. It's awful. It's just awful. One of the hardest things to prepare for when doing a layoff is the why me question. And legally and HR wise, you're going to be told, well, there really was no reason. It's a numbers game and we have to cut back staff. But people aren't stupid. You chose me. You didn't choose the person sitting next to me. You chose me. Why? And you can't tell them. You can't say anything. And as a result, again, brevity is your friend. I understand you're frustrated. I understand this was a shock, that we're not here to debate it. You know, again, here's our HR director to take you through it. That ripping off of the Band-Aid, I think, is very humane. But leading up to that, something that you and I had discussed is, I am very passionate about treating people with the dignity with which I would like to be treated. And it's not easy these days. When you're doing a mass layoff, you know, a lot of companies will send an email. And if you get the next email, you're fired. And if you don't, you're not. And there's no good way to do it. Everything's wrong. You know, you have a mass meeting. And if you're in meeting A, you don't have a job anymore. If you're in meeting B, you do. I can't criticize because, or say you should have done it differently. What I will do, and again, the advantage of a small company is, and you know, we did have to do some reduction in force last year. Every member of my team got communicated with before anything electronic happened. I didn't want the people who were staying to be panicked. I didn't want the people who were going to be leaving to find out electronically. And so I made the harder phone calls. My managers made the easier phone calls. And at least we could give people that dignity of being told. And then the other thing is controlling the messaging internally. Because what we said to the people who were staying is, and really to the people who were leaving, I want to honor their privacy. So listen, no mass messages in email or Teams. Oh, if I can help, here's my cell phone number. Send individual messages. You know, hi, Chris. You know, I just got the news. It's a shame. I'm going to leave. Hey, I don't have your cell phone number. I want to stay in touch with you. Then you can say, oh, Barry, I'm so sorry that that's happening to you. But not mass communication, which just gets everyone all worked up. So I hope those thoughts are useful if anyone has to go through such unpleasantness.
Totally. You know, having been on both sides of that, it made me think of several amazing relationships I have with a manager who informed me ahead of time, or two folks who, you know, were unfortunately part of a layoff I had to be the bearer of bad news. So there are ways to do that where you maintain even stronger relationships. Yes. I think that's great guidance. You talked about alignment, and I know that shared success is a huge trait and value you try to bring to every role you have. So how do you start to foster shared success and alignment across multiple different departments in a company?
It's funny to think about, because there's soft skills and then the more draconian things that you can do. And I guess at a higher level and a softer level, in theory, you have a cultural alignment that comes from the tippy top about what's most important to us. Are you a transactional sales organization that needs numbers? In our case, we are not at all transactional. And when we talk about needing partners, our solution is not a set it and forget it. So if you think you're going to call Talru, place your job ads, get lots of candidates and never have to think about it again, it's not going to work. We need to talk to you every couple of weeks. We need to tweak the system. We need to watch our pricing. It's a very dynamic marketplace. And if everyone from your BDR to your sales executive to your national account managers and your CS folks aren't aligned on what the ultimate goal is coming from the top, you're going to have a problem. And in our case, the focus is on lifetime value. And so that makes for some difficult conversations, because if you are someone who is paid on commission as either an account executive or an account manager for the farming side of a customer relationship, you might not be very happy when your customer wants to reduce their monthly budget. But we're in the hiring business. If they don't need people, why would I want them to spend money? Why would I even do that? I want them forever. So what's best for them? We also have issues where, for instance, because it's a dynamic marketplace based on bidding, if we wanted to, we could artificially spend your money. I could jack your bids to the sky and consume your budget. Now, some customers want the budget consumed. They don't want it left over, but you don't, I say it very plainly to my team. If you do something artificial to consume a customer's budget, we're going to have a problem. Nothing artificial. Now, if they're not ranking well and their jobs aren't getting activity, maybe we're underpriced. So we might need to bring that up. That's okay. What's in the best interest of the customer? If we do what's in the best interest of the customer, we will have lifetime value. I don't care if 1 month is off. I do care about your commission check. I care about mine. I get paid on revenue too. But in 1 month, no, we're not going to make short-term decisions. Do we? Do I have to fight to make sure we don't? Sure. You know, because people are people. So having the alignment around what's most important is really where it starts. And then it's funny to think about, to go back to an unpleasant conversation or a difficult conversation, often even with people who don't report to me, I'll have to say, can I talk to you about why this customer is performing the way they are? Well, we thought we had to increase the bids because they weren't getting enough activity. And I said, yeah, but look at what's happened to their KPIs. We're going to get fired. It might feel good now, but we're going to get fired if our pricing is too high. So can we take a look at this and scale it back? And then I love stories like, you know what? We scaled things back. We had a quieter month and they gave us more budget for next month. That's right. Because you did what was best for them. And so I try not to pull rank, but rather motivate, cajole, remind, knowing that I can drop a hammer if I want to. But, you know, long term, you want folks doing the right thing. So I hope that, those are useful thoughts.
Yes, very helpful. Very helpful. Okay, so we're in the lightning round portion. Okay. Three quick questions. We're going to knock these out very, very fast. So the first, is there a book, blog, newsletter, website, or video that you'd recommend to our listeners?
I will. It's funny. We were just chatting about the alignment and things like that. I am a big fan of Simon Sinek, and I would highly recommend, and I've been watching this, I've been sharing this. If you just Google Simon Sinek, and it is Infinite Game versus Finite Game, I think it's a brilliant analysis. He gives credit where it's due to how this idea evolved. But if you have, you know, oftentimes it'll be salespeople against customer success people, right? If you have finite game people who think they're playing a 9-inning baseball game and infinite game people who want your customers forever, infinite, you're going to have some clash. So I'm very into that concept and a lot of his work. Also, I'm a big fan of reading history. I think it's a nice way to I've been making my way through John Meacham's books on Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, and there's just lessons in there from great thinkers. And when presented by a great writer and a great historian, you say, oh, that resonates with me. You know, the lessons of the Revolutionary War times, and especially leadership, seem to apply still today. And I always find that very interesting. And it's a nice way to read and explore things that, you know, aren't on the web and, you know, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Great nudges there. I'm a big Simon Sinek fan too. Start with why is one of my favorites. Ooh. All right. What about people? Any folks jump to mind that are inspirational in the B2B space that you think we should have on the show?
Oh boy. I will give a shout out to a consultancy firm that we've worked with, and I will be honored to let them know that I'm discussing them. A company called Growth Molecules, who focus on the customer success realm. The Growth Molecules team with Amelia Dancica as the CEO and her team has had a huge impact on our success at Talru. A wonderful perspective of customer success, the touch points on B2B, the trends, implementation of our software. So yeah, I'm a big fan. So I think there'd be great value for your listeners.
Awesome. We'll reach out to that. Awesome name too, Growth Molecules. Growth Molecules, love that. All right. And then the most important question, how can people get in touch with you after the podcast?
Certainly. I am B. Klein, B-K-L-E-I-N, at talru.com. Luckily, Talru is very easy to spell, T-A-L-R-O-O, B. Klein at talru.com. Also, I'm on LinkedIn. I think I'm Barry-Klein. And, you know, I'd love to hear from any listeners, pick up these conversations where we're leaving them off here. Talk about anyone who wants prints of my daughter's art. You know, I'll take whatever. It'd be a pleasure to interact with any of your listeners.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Barry. We appreciate you joining the show.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Chris.
Today's episode is made possible by DemandBase. DemandBase is smarter GTM for B2B brands to help marketing and sales teams spot the juiciest opportunities earlier and progress them faster. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Sunnyside Up. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us and subscribe to our show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you consume podcasts. You can also find us on YouTube and Demand Based TV.